Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the call and talk show about health and natural medicine. It's June 12, 2019. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host Ron Meniza. If you'd like to participate in the conversation about natural medicine, you can call us at 860-486-9487. That's 860-486-9487. If you can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org. You can also check out my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at Fran Storch ND. All right. So this is the first time in like a month I don't have a guest.
Wow. How about that?
I'm feeling lonely. Yeah. I don't know what to
talk
about.
I'm here. You don't have to feel too lonely.
Yeah, I guess you are.
Yeah, you know, right. I'm not that bad. Yeah. I mean, I know I'm just second fiddle to a guest, but oh well.
Right. So what I wanted to talk about today is the first thing is concerns about your blood pressure medication. So if you're on a blood pressure medication, there can be some concerns around that. So different blood pressure medications have different issues. But one big thing that I see a lot is that, of course, doctors are very concerned that their patients have high blood pressure. And so they keep them on the medications. And people's lives change. And the thing with blood pressure medications is they can be kind of odd, because my opinion is that your blood pressure needs change depending on what you're doing. You're going to need more blood pressure if you're trying to climb a hill on a bike or trying to climb a hill while you're walking, and you're going to need less blood pressure if just sitting around doing nothing. So the thing is, sometimes blood pressure medications can overcorrect. That is an issue that can happen a lot. The first thing that happens that I see is sometimes people actually successfully lose weight. Say you're 5'3", like me, and you're sitting in 170 pounds and you have high blood pressure. So your doctor gives you a particular dose of a medication. Say they give you amlodipine and they give you 20 milligrams. And so at 170 pounds and 20 milligrams, your blood pressure is good. It's sitting at, say, 110 over 70, which is a very healthy blood pressure. Then you decide, you know what? This is the year. I'm gonna lose some weight. You discover the bicycle, which is a great thing to discover. Or you discover some other kind of sport. And we know that 30% of fat loss is exercise, whereas 70% is in the kitchen. So you discover the kitchen and you look around your kitchen and you go, my goodness, too much junky foods, too much refined processed stuff, and you get rid of it and you stock your kitchen up with all kinds of good, healthy, organic produce, healthy produce, and lots of clean protein and some nuts and seeds and all natural foods, and you start eating really well. And 5 months, 6 months later, there you are. You were 170 pounds in March. And, 5 months later, in August, you're sitting at 130 pounds. But you're still on 20 milligrams of amlodipine, and you can't understand why you're falling asleep. It's hard to get it up the hill, and you're exhausted from your exercise efforts. Well, it could be that your dose of your blood pressure is just too high. And so when that happens, the first thing to do is to talk to your doctor about lowering your needs can change based on your weight. And one of the things that I see happen sometimes is patients will lose a significant amount of weight. They'll go back to their doctors and their doctors won't want to change a thing. And I don't understand how that makes sense, because you're going to have there's less body mass to take care of, and there's a significant less reduced amount of body mass to take care of if you've lost 40 pounds. So make sure you talk to your doctor about cutting your dose, lowering the dose, or possibly using a different kind of medication, because blood pressure medications, they have different mechanisms of action, and different mechanisms of action can affect you in different ways. So let's dive into that a little bit. So one medication that doctors often will put patients on first, because they think they have a minimum of side effects, and they do and they don't, you see. The first one is hydrochlorothiazide and other loop diuretics. So what a diuretic does is it makes you lose sodium It affects your, it affects the mineral pumps in your, in the loops of your kidneys, the loops of Henle, and that's where you absorb your minerals, and it makes it so that you absorb less sodium. So water follows sodium. That's why they always talk about lowering your sodium to lower your blood pressure, because water will follow sodium. Water tends to bond to it and stay with it. And so when there's more sodium in your body, if it's not balanced with other calming minerals like magnesium and potassium, you're going to have more water in your body. And that's true in the interstitium. When there's excess sodium in the body, the body tries to dilute it, which is why some people find that if they eat a whole bunch of salt and it's not backed up by things like potassium and magnesium, which are calming minerals, that they swell, that you get edema in your tissues. So if you take hydrochlorothiazide or other loop diuretics, it causes the loops not to absorb so much sodium. And so when you have less sodium in your body, water is going to come out. And that's why if you're on a loop diuretic, you might find yourself running for the bathroom all the time. But the problem with hydrochlorothiazide is that hydrochlorothiazide's job is to make you run for the bathroom more. So what's your risk? You're going to become dehydrated. So you have to make sure, as much as it's uncomfortable because you're going to the bathroom all the time, you have to make sure you don't get dehydrated. So you have to drink extra. The other thing is that loop diuretics do not spare minerals. All the minerals that are absorbed into your loops and of Henle are let go. So you lose potassium, magnesium, calcium. So you lose minerals that you need. You lose your calming minerals as well as your excitatory minerals. So the sodium does two things. One of the things, as I said, is the sodium. Water follows sodium. So you're going to have more water in your body. And therefore, if you have more water, you're going to have more pressure in your body. If we reduce the water volume in your body, you're going to have a lower blood pressure. So that's one thing. And the other thing is if you have less sodium in your body, you have met less potential for action potentials in all of the nerves in your body. And that includes your blood vessels. So everything is going to be calmer. The problem is when you take those loop diuretics, you're going to lose sodium, potassium, calcium, and magnesium. And so one of the functions of potassium, magnesium, and calcium is they help to moderate those action potentials that the sodium causes. The sodium causes an excitatory event to occur in your body, in your nerves, so that channels are opened and you have an action potential, which is just an electrical impulse in your nerve cells, which makes the nerve, whatever nerve it is, do its thing. So if you have less sodium, things in general are not going to be as excitable. And so, so when you lose extra minerals, even though you're losing sodium too, you're not losing all of your sodium. Guess what? Even though the goal is to make your nerves and muscles less excitable, they're going to be more excitable if they don't have enough magnesium, calcium, and potassium. So what do you have to do? If you're on a loop diuretic, you should be replacing those things. That's why some good doctors will tell you, make sure you're eating your fruit, have a banana a day, have some cantaloupe, because cantaloupe is relatively high in potassium. Even better, have coconut water. I like coconut water because coconut water is really high in potassium for a minimum of calories, and it's very bioavailable. When you drink coconut water, it gets right in. So if you like coconut water, it can be a great way to get your potassium on. And there's so many different there's so many different choices for coconut water now. You can get plain coconut water. You can get raw coconut water. You can get flavored coconut water. You can get coconut water with coconut pieces in it or not, like fresh pressed coconut water. You can get, now I just found a product that's a coconut water that's fizzy. Now you're speaking my language. One of the coconut water brands is making a fizzy coconut water beverage. I bought one yesterday. I haven't tried it yet. It's in the fridge. So I'll probably try it tonight because it's nice and cold, and I bet it will be super refreshing. And boy, if I like that, that's going to be my jam. Two things that I really wish I had is because I'm a fizzy girl. I like fizzy water. I avoid diet soda because diet soda has sweeteners in it that I just don't want to be a part of, whether it's sucralose or NutraSweet. I just don't want to be around them. So I don't do diet soda. For a while, I was doing, flavored fizzy beverages. And that had some sweetener in them. And I don't do those anymore. I do enjoy flavored seltzer. So if I'm at the convenience store, I'll grab a flavored seltzer. And I've trained myself to enjoy just the plain flavored seltzer that has no sweetener in it. Or I'll just get seltzer and I'll put some fruit in it myself. So that's a good way to go. And by the way, if you're doing seltzer, try not to have seltzer as a substitute for water. You should enjoy a glass or two of seltzer, and the rest of the day, if you're really trying to hydrate, plain water is a really good way to hydrate. And have other things. You don't want to do too much fizzy. There's some issue with teeth that you've got carbonic acid and it could eat at your enamel. That's certainly true if you're doing a sweetened soda beverage, because now you have carbonic acid with sugar, and that's a disaster for your enamel, and then you're going to set up for bad bacteria and you're going to destroy your tooth enamel. And we got here from telling you how to rehydrate when you're on hydrochlorothiazide and other loop diuretics. So one of the things you want to do is make sure you get those minerals in. Like I said, having foods with potassium in them, eating your fruits and vegetables will help you rehydrate. That'll help you get your potassium on. And like I said, extra potassium. If you are cramping regularly because you're on a loop diuretic, you might want to have a glass of coconut water a day. That can be really helpful. I had, because that happened to my mom. She lost weight. That she's one of the people that was affected by this. She was on a blood pressure med and she lost a bunch of weight. And then one day she passed out and they figured out that her blood pressure med dose was too high, lo and behold. And, when she was there, when that happened, fortunately my sister was around. So I told her, go to the store and get her some coconut water. And my mother felt so much better and did so well on the coconut water that now she buys it by the case. It's pretty funny. So, anyway, if you don't replenish with minerals, you are at the risk of having muscle cramps and brain fog, irritability, all kinds of nerve symptoms. All right. So, one way to do it, like I said, is to eat healthy produce. And the other is to take a supplement that has mixed minerals in it. And, you know, your friendly local naturopath or physician can help you with finding the right supplement, right mixed mineral supplement for you. Make sure if you get one that you've had it vetted by somebody who knows what they're doing. Because if you just grab something at the drugstore, it might be just fine and it might not be. So it might have forms of minerals that are not as absorbable. And an expert, a nutritionist, possibly a physician, definitely a naturopathic physician, can look at it and tell you that if it's going to be helpful to you and that if you're going to be able to absorb it well. So you can get muscle cramps, you can get brain fog, nerve symptoms. If you're having symptoms like that, you don't necessarily have to assume that you just have Lyme disease. You might have just low minerals. And that could be what's going on, that it can be harder to hydrate yourself. Certainly it's harder to hydrate yourself and keep yourself hydrated and keep your minerals on if you're taking a loop diuretic. So be careful of that. All right. So the next class of blood pressure med that can be a problem. Yes, Ronald.
I have a caller that had a question for you.
Okay.
Unless you want to take it a little bit later on.
All right. Let's see. So do we want to interrupt the topic? What was the question?
Question is about this gentleman, guy called in, and he has he had a bladder stone removed, and he is now on Flomax, and he wants to know if there's something holistically he can do, because the doctor seems to feel that he could stay on Flomax forever if it makes him feel good.
Right. Okay.
And he also wants to know what the side effects might be.
Of Flomax?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So if you wouldn't mind answering that question, he'd love to hear it.
All right. All right. So let's go. First of all, let's talk about what is Flomax. So So this guy, all right. So he had a bladder, he had a stone in his bladder.
Yes.
Okay. Not in his kidney, but in his bladder.
That's
correct. And then the doctor put him on Flomax.
And, you know, it was clogging his urethra.
Sure.
So,
my. That is not good.
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't sound like it would feel very nice. No.
Okay. Let's talk about what Flomax is. Flomax is tamsulosin hydrochloride. And the way that it works, so well, the way that it works, it's a it's an alpha adrenergic blocking agent. Oof. So it does have cell activity for the alpha 1 receptors in the prostate gland, and so the so what this does, so if it's an, if it blocks alpha adrenergic receptors, the sphincters that that hold in urine are going to be more tight. So when you block those alpha adrenergic receptors, then, you know, the your norepinephrine and epinephrine, the neurotransmitters that attach to the those alpha adrenergic receptors, are going to be blocked. And so those sphincters, the outlets for fluid in the prostate and also the urethra, are going to be more relaxed and more stuff is going to come out. So if you have a prostate that's not letting go of fluid so easily, that's going to be more relaxed. So your prostate's going to be going to get smaller. And then your urethra as well is going to function better. The sphincters between the at the ureter to the bladder and then the bladder on out, those sphincters are going to be calmer. So you're going to get more urinary flow. That's what it, that's why it's called Flomax. And so that's how the thing works. So in terms of side effects, what are the side effects of Flomax? So Flomax, so there's a lot of different side effects that can happen with Flomax. You know, it's like anything else. But also, I wonder if because it's pushing, it's going to be a couple of things. It's pushing your kidneys to push out more fluid. So you're going to get some issues related to dehydration, like we were talking about before. And then it's also going to, there's also going to be, so there's going to be different issues related to increased urinary output. And believe it or not, that can take place all over the body. So first of all, if you're dehydrated, you can get a headache. You can get an infection if you don't have as much fluid in your body because you're letting it go. So your mucous membranes are going to be a little drier. You can get some back pain because we're pushing on the kidneys and the kidneys are going to be grumbling. Chest pain. I'm not sure what the mechanism of that, but maybe because you have a it's blocking those alpha adrenergic receptors, which means that you're going to have I don't know if you're going to have more activity in your heart. I'm not sure why the chest, but the mechanism of that is exactly. But you can get rhinitis, pharyngitis, cough, and sinusitis. That's all from, I think that's a fluid balance issue. There's changes in the fluid balance that are going to make it so that, you know, you're going to get more respiratory issues. It seems weird that it's blocking, doing its work in the urinary system, and it's going to have effects on your respiratory system. But I think that's because it's changing fluid balance. And so if you're a little bit drier in your mucous membranes, things are going to become more irritated and inflamed. You can also get digestive issues, diarrhea and nausea. Also tooth disorders, that I am not sure of the mechanism there unless that has to do with the hydration of the gums. Not sure about that. And then diarrhea and nausea, again, so you're blocking the an adrenergic receptor, so you're going to get an upregulation of your rest and digest. So you might have more activity in your digestive system. That may be how that works. Then you can get abnormal ejaculation. So the issue there is that when you have ejaculation, it's a dance between the sympathetic and the parasympathetic system. You have to get excited enough to make it happen, but you have to be also be relaxed enough to make it happen. And so because this is blocking the alpha adrenergic receptors, it might not happen as easily. So, and then you can get blurred vision, and that is the blurred vision, that's going to be an anticholinergic side effect. So when you start blocking the adrenergic receptors, you can get side effects in the cholinergic system, and that's what that is. So those are possible side effects of this tamsulosin. So the thing is, the reason he's being given the tamsulosin, the Flomax, is because his doc is figuring that if he has more urinary flow, anything in there is going to be more likely to come out. That's how that's going to work. So if there's any gravel, if there's any stones, if you have more flow, anything that's stuck in there is going to be more likely to come out. Is that necessarily going to dilute his urine enough and make it so that he has enough alkalinity to dissolve his minerals so that he doesn't make more stones? I don't know. That's not necessarily the direction I would go. And when you take Flomax, you know, I assume that he's going to have more urinary frequency. He's going to have to run for the bathroom more. He's going to be more satisfied because when he goes, there's going to be more volume. So he's not going to be straining to go to the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, he's going to be going to the bathroom a lot. And, you know, it's at a chemical level that is happening. So that's kind of concerning. So how we would handle it in naturopathic matters, once somebody's getting kidney stones, it's nice to know what kind of stone it is. But usually you assume that it's a calcium oxalate stone because that's the most common kidney stone that there is. And the number one way that there's a really rare and precious substance that can help keep you out of kidney stones.
Oh boy, here it comes.
You ready for it?
Drum roll, please.
Really, really rare and precious, hard to find, unless you go to your kitchen sink.
Water.
Mm.
Mm.
Yes.
More water.
So,
take more water.
Right. So, without taking a drug, the number one thing to do if you're a kidney stone person is to dilute your urine, because if you dilute your urine, then you're not going to get little stones precipitating out of it as much. And so that's the number one thing to do. If you can approach a gallon a day of water, that's going to go a long way to help. That for you folks who have gout, same thing. If you dilute the uric acid in your urinary system, in your blood and your urinary system, you're going to be less likely to precipitate out uric acid stones and having them get stuck in your toe or your kidneys or your knee or wherever they tend to get stuck. Hydrate. It's like my friend Evan Johnson said, hydrate or die. So that's the number one thing, but drink water. If you're not drinking enough water or you're drinking too much coffee and you're not, and the coffee is satisfying you, so you're not drinking enough water, drink more water, just plain old water with nothing in it. That's going to be your best defense against the kidney stones. So beyond that, yes, there's other things that you can take. And, there's some nice herbs that can help to keep the urinary flow going. One of them is saw palmetto. Saw palmetto is great for moderating the hormonal effects that cause the prostate to swell. That can help. So that is if there's a component of prostate issues here. And you can be more likely to get a bladder stone if you have some urine tending to back up behind the prostate because your prostate is enlarged. This gentleman didn't tell us if it is. But if your prostate is enlarged, it's squeezing on your urethra because the prostate surrounds the urethra.
Sure.
And so even if you're able to go to the bathroom, you might have a little bit of chronic slight backup all the time behind that prostate. And so if the prostate is smaller and more of a normal size, you're not going to have as much pressure on the urethra. And any urine that's behind the prostate is going to be more likely to, you know, develop stones. So getting that prostate smaller is a good goal. And one way to do that is to take saw palmetto. Another way to do that is to eat your cruciferous vegetables that have I3C, which lowers your estrogen levels. And believe it or not, estrogen levels in men can be a cause of an enlarged prostate. So if you eat more cruciferous vegetables, so that's your broccoli and cabbage and chard and kale and cauliflower, all those things, they're high and they're all high in I3C. You can also take supplements with I3C or its metabolite, diindolylmethane, DIM. And that can also lower your estrogen receptor status and your estrogen levels. And so that can help to shrink the prostate as well. So those are hormonal directions to go. There is a lovely herb called Stonebreaker, Chanca Piedra. And you can get combinations with chanca piedra in it or just the herb itself, and that can help keep you out of kidney stones. And along with that, I like corn silk and I like hydrangea. Those are good urinary herbs that just help keep things moving along. Cleavers is another one. I like cleavers. Ron and I were we went to the road that's off of in North Windham where there's the big lavender stand, and I found some cleavers and it makes a little instant corsage. So I picked some and I put it on him and it sticks to you. That's why it's called cleavers.
Was Ward and June and
You're
Beaver.
So
and
funny. Yeah. Oh my goodness.
And Wally there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Beaver cleaver, right?
The cleavers.
Yes. So cleavers is funny. It's this cute little plant that has a longish stalk, and it has little oval-shaped leaves that stick out in fours up the stem. And it has little tiny hooks on it. So it's also known as bed straw because it was used for that too. That you stuff lots because it grows wherever it grows, you know, a lot of it grows and you can take the herb and stuff it into a bed. But it's a great urinary tonic. So that's another one that you use. The other thing to take is one of the things that I keep whining about is that people don't consume enough magnesium.
We talk about that a lot, don't we?
Yeah. Mm. So magnesium, where do you get your magnesium?
You get it from dark leafy greens.
Anything green. Anything green at all. You're also going to get it from any produce. It's going to have some magnesium in it, but it's going to have more magnesium is going to be in anything that's green and leafy. Anything that actually does photosynthesis will have a lot of magnesium in it because chlorophyll, the mineral that's in the, at the center of the heme ring in chlorophyll, is magnesium.
Right. And isn't there some concern about whether or not there's enough magnesium in our soil to get the magnesium from the dark greens?
That's true. And so if you so you have to be careful of your sources of your greens and the and if they're organic, they're going to be more likely to have magnesium in them. And if you know the farmer and you have really good farmers in your area that you can talk to, then find out what their growing practices are and how they control the amount of magnesium that's in their greens. And some will add mineral salts. They'll add magnesium to the soil so that the plants have more magnesium in them. And then you're going to get your magnesium. And you can take magnesium supplements. And in fact, magnesium citrate, magnesium citrate or magnesium citrate malate, and also magnesium and potassium citrate malate can also keep you out of kidney stones. And you can get supplements that have either or both of those in it. And I generally will have people who have a propensity to stones take those things. Once again, because magnesium will compete for precipitation in your urine. It will make the calcium less likely to precipitate into the urine, and the citric acid as well will make it less likely to precipitate into your urine. So a combination of drinking lots and lots of water, if you can get yourself into a gallon a day, that's great. That's ideal. And then you won't have to take the, you might not have to take the drugs. And then you take your magnesium citrate or citrate malate, possibly potassium citrate malate, and get and eat produce. Eat loads of produce and stuff with I3C, like your cruciferous vegetables. And then supplement-wise, you can take DIM, you can take salt palmetto, you can take cleavers, and you can take chanca piedra. And I said corn silk and hydrangea. Yeah, all of those. So that's what you do when you have stones. All right. So thank you very much for the call.
Thank you, Guy.
Yeah. The guy's name is Guy?
Yes. And I think he just got an earful of information.
Earful. Yeah.
An earful.
I do that.
Because you do that. Yes, you do.
Okay. So let's go on to the next class of blood pressure medications. And let's talk about what the issues can be. So the next class will be the beta blockers. So your beta blockers are all the ones that end in allol. Did you know that propranolol sent me to naturopathic college?
No.
I always say that. Propranolol and Premarin. Yeah, because they were made by, they were developed by Ehrst, who I used to work for. And I was working at Ehrst where I saved my pennies. And then I used those pennies to go to naturopathic college. So I always joke about propranolol. And propranolol, I may have been the first beta blocker, but that's not the one that you usually see people on. You usually see people on metoprolol. That seems to be number one beta blocker. And I tend to think it's because the companies have a good marketing campaign. I don't know if it's because it has a lower side effect profile. I don't know why it would. But metoprolol, propranolol, carvedilol, but I think there's one called bisoprolol. There's a whole bunch of any drug that ends in olol is generally a beta blocker. So what's a beta blocker? A beta blocker blocks your, so we were talking about the alpha adrenergic receptors when we were talking about the, because there are a lot of alpha adrenergic receptors in the urinary tract. Beta, so these are, now we're talking about beta adrenergic receptors. So beta receptors control your fight or flight. And when they are stimulated, you get more fight or flight. So what do you suppose your inhaler is when you have bronchitis or asthma? It's a beta agonist. So when you take albuterol, albuterol is a beta agonist. That's a, and so it's a bronchodilator. So it causes more fight or flight symptoms. So it upregulates the bonding of your norepinephrine and epinephrine And it stimulates your beta receptors so that it will speed up your heart rate, your breathing rate, open up your airways. So you have to be careful with that's why you kind of get a head rush when you take your inhaler, because it's suddenly increasing your circulation and your breathing rate and a whole bunch of things are happening there. Well, when you take a beta blocker, it stops all that. So it slows down your heart rate. It slows, lowers your blood pressure, and it makes it so that the things that make you excited, it blocks your ability to become overly excited, and it can do that both physiologically and mentally. So one of the things you'll see with beta blockers is they can just slow you down. If you're taking a low dose, that might be helpful. Beta blockers are given both for hypertension, high blood pressure, and they're also given to help regulate heart rhythm. So if you have a heart rhythm where the heart's beating too much and it's beating overly fast, or it's just beating incorrectly, if you slow it down, then you're going to have less of those abnormal heart rhythms. But it will slow you down, and it'll slow you down in every way. So one of the things you'll see is that beta blockers will give you exercise intolerance. I'll have people say, and one of the things I'll see is that people will be taking beta blockers for their blood pressure. You know, of course, their doctor wants them to lose weight and get healthy and get exercise, but they have exercise intolerance. It makes it difficult for them to get their heart rate going, and they feel really tired when they exercise. So it's a vicious cycle. They can't get more exercise because they're on this drug that's lowering their blood pressure, even though the goal is to get their weight down so they don't have to be on the blood pressure med. So it's a vicious cycle. So if that's happening too much for you and you're just really dragged down, it can also make you depressed because you're getting less circulation happening, or your circulation is happening at a slower rate. So you know why one of the reasons, when number one, when you wake up in the morning, you're like, I don't want to get out of bed. Also, when you go to exercise, you're like, I don't want to do this, because your blood is not circulating at a super fast rate. And one of the places it's not circulating to relatively quickly is your brain, which is why when you drink beet juice, all of a sudden you're like, oh, I'm ready to go, because it's a nitric oxide enhancer. So it increases circulation everywhere, including your brain. So what do you suppose is going to happen if you take a beta blocker and now you have less circulation to your brain?
Things, you're not going to be thinking very clearly.
You're not going to feel like doing stuff.
Yeah.
And yes, you might not be thinking so clearly. Sure. You're going to be a little foggy, and you might even be depressed. So when you don't have as much circulation to your brain, it slows you down in every way. Because it reduces the circulation to the brain, it helps with anxiety and migraines. But is that the direction you want to go?
No.
Yeah. I mean, it's not, if you have a migraine, like if you're taking the beta blocker as needed for migraines, I don't know if that's what people do. But you know, I think some people might take them for as needed for migraines, as opposed to taking one every day. Sure. Oof. Beta blockers can be used for migraines, for sure.
Wow.
And definitely for anxiety. And they can be used to help people with panic attacks, just because they reduce the activity of the sympathetic nervous system. So I think you can use them acutely, but, you know, people tend to take them long term, but they slow everything down. That's the issue. And so if that's happening to you and you're at a place where, you know, you just can't get out of your own way, you're gaining weight, you have exercise intolerance, you might want to talk to your doctor about taking if you have to take a blood pressure med, take one that has a different mechanism of action, and then also consider coming to see a naturopathic physician, because we can help you with lifestyle modifications. The thing is, not everybody wants to do the lifestyle modifications, and high blood pressure is dangerous. The danger of high blood pressure is that if you have too much circulation to your brain over time, you can get a stroke. If you have too much pressure, and if you have too much pressure beating against arteries, you can damage the arteries. So you're more likely to get cardiovascular disease, and you're more likely to get cerebrovascular disease. That is heart attack and stroke, because your body's going to want to go ahead and repair the blood vessels that have been beaten against, and then you get blockages. And so that's how that happens. That's why, you know, it's a good goal to have your blood pressure be lower. But one great way to lower your blood pressure is to do less stuff and do more rest. And do more restful activities. So There's other blood pressure medications. You have to be careful of if you take an ACE inhibitor. ACE inhibitors can give you a cough. ACE inhibitors are they are angiotensin converting enzyme inhibitors. So they block this whole system in your body, the renin angiotensin system. So you make renin when the kidneys, in order for the kidneys to make sure that they're getting hydrated, they make this hormone called renin. So renin is in a pathway with angiotensin, which is in a pathway with aldosterone. So anyway, renin gets converted by angiotensin converting enzyme 1 to angiotensin 1, and then angiotensin 1 gets converted to angiotensin 2 by angiotensin converting enzyme, and then angiotensin 2 gets converted to aldosterone, and aldosterone holds on to sodium, which holds on to water, which raises your blood pressure. So if you block that pathway in various spots, you can reduce blood pressure. All right, so ACE inhibitors in general, so what's an example of an ACE inhibitor? Quick, what's an example of an ACE inhibitor?
Don't know.
All right. Fine. An example of an ACE inhibitor
you're the one
is
with
going
all the,
to
all the answers.
let me find the list of the ACE inhibitors. Where's the list? Oh, here we go. Anything that ends in prill. All the generic drugs that end in prill. So if you're on a drug that ends in prill, it's an ACE inhibitor. Enalapril, ramipril, quinapril, perindopril, I never heard of that. Lisinopril I see people on very commonly. I've seen people on lisinopril, benazepril, enalapril. Those are the three that I see people on most commonly. I have not seen people on trandolapril, never heard of it, or silazapril. I definitely have seen people on quinapril and ramipril, but not as commonly. The one I see most commonly is lisinopril, followed by benazepril, followed by enalapril. So it depends on who's marketing to who. Let me see. So those are the angiotensin converting enzyme, and they block the and then there's captopril and zofenopril as well. Captopril was actually the first ACE inhibitor discovered, and the first one that was on the market. So the issue is that they can cause side effects, and they can cause you to have a cough, and that's a big one. The ACE inhibitors, any drug that acts on the kidneys is going to have some kidney function issues. So you have to be careful of how your kidneys are doing, because it's affecting the function of the kidneys. So when you use an ACE inhibitor, that's going to be an issue. And then there's the sartans, angiotensin 2. So it works in the same pathway, the angiotensin 2 receptor antagonists, and they end in sartan, losartan, valsartan. They had some issues. The angiotensin converting enzyme, the receptor antagonists, and they had some interesting issues in the past few years. So they're also known as ARBs. Observation is that people tolerated them pretty well. Your potassium to rise, and they can also cause swelling. But it's true that I've seen that people tend to tolerate them very well. And they are used, they're used for hypertension. They're also used for heart failure, congestive heart failure. They're used for kidney failure and diabetes and chronic kidney disease. They can affect your kidneys. And some people have belly pain when they, digestive issues when they take olmesartan. That's one of the that's one of them. So any of your if you're taking anything that ends in sartan, azilsartan, the ones I see most commonly are losartan, and then I see valsartan, and I see olmesartan. But there's also azilsartan, candesartan, eprosartan. I've heard of irbesartan, and I've never heard of telmisartan. But anyway, if you're on one of those, that's an angiotensin II receptor antagonist. All of these drugs, as I said, so what I said before about if you've lost weight and your dose is too high and you're finding that you can't get out of your own way, you're exhausted, you're depressed, you're sleeping a lot, it may be because your dose is too high. So that is definitely something to be careful of. All right. So those are the angiotensin II receptor antagonists. So those are blood pressure medications and how to be, you want to be careful of those. All right. So I wanted to caution you about antidepressants. So antidepressants can also cause some concerning side effects. And if you're getting these effects, then you might want to talk to your doctor about taking a different antidepressant. So here's a general rule about antidepressants. If you're having trouble with depression or any psychiatric condition, it might be a good idea to get a genetic test. And there are genetic tests on the market that your doctor can administer to you that will tell you genetically if you have, if it's possible that you'll have issues with certain pharmaceutical medications. It'll give you a nice list of pharmaceutical medications organized by class, and it'll tell you if these will tend to be helpful to you, or if you're going to have side effects with them and which side effects you might be inclined to have. So doing a test with a company like that can be really helpful. So if you're seeing a psychiatrist or you're seeing your PCP, or definitely if you're seeing your friendly local naturopath, you might want to consider doing one of these tests so that you can dial in the correct medication for you. I can't tell you how many patients with psychiatric issues, depression, anxiety, and even tendency towards psychosis, have come in and they've had to be, they've done like experiments on them because they don't know which drug to give them. And it can be really helpful if you have the genetic information, because it'll tell you more specifically which meds you might do well on and which problems you're more likely to have. The neat thing is when you do tests like that, if you have access to your text file of your genome, there are tests that we can do on them to help you dial in your supplementation, and that might help you as well. Antidepressants, especially the SSRIs, so your selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor. So that's based on the idea that if you are depressed, you have lower serotonin function in your brain, and some people, in fact, take selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors and they feel better. And if that's you, and you feel better when you're taking it, then that's great. I feel like in general, if you're a person who's chronically depressed or anxious and you take an SSRI for it and it's working for you, there's a relatively low side effect profile with those drugs. There are certain drugs that I'm not thrilled with because I think the side effect profile is pretty much not worth it. And one class of drugs that concerns me there, depending on the circumstances, of course, but one class of drugs that concern me are the bisphosphonates for osteoporosis. Those drugs, the side effect profile is pretty much, it's not worth it. It's so much more worthwhile to just get your supplements right, take your vitamin K2, get your exercise. Now, not everybody can do that. But the risks of digestive upset and bone cancer are just not worth it, and jaw necrosis. So I tend to recommend against those drugs. But antidepressants as a class, depending on what it is, they tend to have a low side effect profile. So if somebody comes in and they're on escitalopram and they're doing well on it, I'm like, all right, stay on it. That's fine. Are you happy? Are you healthy on it? Great. I don't encourage people to come off it unless they say, I want to come off it. And then we try to help them. And then if they come off it and they feel bad, I'm like, so go back on it. It's all right. But SSRIs can cause weight gain and sexual dysfunction because serotonin is involved in the digestive system. It's involved in hunger and satiety. And sertraline is a big one for doing that. It tends to cause weight gain and it tends to cause sexual dysfunction. Vortioxetine hasn't been seen to cause weight gain, but it does give people bad digestive symptoms, unfortunately. So if you're taking vortioxetine, now if you're taking vortioxetine is something that's given to people who are bipolar, and it tends to help be helpful to them. It can also be helpful just for depression. And there's an interesting story about vortioxetine. The brand name of vortioxetine is Trintellix. And I noticed one day that Trintellix was now Trintellix because it used to be Brintellix. And I'm like, oh, that's interesting. They changed the name from Brintellix to Trintellix.
And why did they do that?
There's a really good reason. Because I'm assuming this is why. Because people were getting handed the wrong drug. Because there's a drug that has a very similar name to Brintellix.
Yeah.
Brilinta.
Okay.
Yeah, so Brintellix, Brilinta, not too far off, are they?
All right.
They're completely different drugs. Yeah, Brilinta is a blood thinner. So it's not going to help your depression. And if you have no need for a blood thinner, it's not a good thing to be on.
Right.
And if you need a blood thinner and you're given Brintellix, you're going to be very cheery, but you're not going to have blood thinning. That's probably that's going to be a less dangerous situation if you're mistakenly given Brintellix instead of Brilinta. But if you're given Brilinta instead of Brintellix, that's not good because you don't need to be anticoagulated if you don't have a problem with that. So I think that's why the change happened. So now there's no more Brintellix; it's now Trintellix, and the generic name is vortioxetine. But it does give you digestive symptoms. Then atypical antipsychotics like Seretil, which is quetiapine, and Abilify, which is aripiprazole. Those can cause weight gain and also cause tardive dyskinesia because they're antipsychotics. And again, if you do one of those tests that test you genetically to see which pharmaceutical meds are right for you, you may have a genetic predisposition to gaining weight on those drugs. And if you are, then you can do more modification or change up the drugs or try to use a different class of drugs for whatever you're trying to treat. Tardive dyskinesia is, the dopamine theory of schizophrenia dictates that you downregulate dopamine in people who are displaying signs of psychosis. So if you downregulate dopamine too much, what Parkinson's is a deficit of dopamine. You have receptors that you have neurotransmitters and nerves that are degenerating in your brain that contain dopamine in them. And so you have side effects and you have issues that are related to low dopamine. And that can be you have that festinating gait where you can't initiate your walk. So you'll stop walking and then you take a few steps because you fall forward, and then you stop and you take a few steps and you fall forward. That's a festinating gait. That's a classic sign of Parkinson's. Also the pill rolling tremor where you tend to have a tremor where you're rubbing your thumb against your fingers. You can have a resting tremor where you're just shaking your hands, your arms or your hands or other parts of you shake. You have difficulty initiating movement. And you will tend to have a mask-like countenance. You'll have a low affect countenance. So anyway, when you take drugs that block the activity of dopamine, you can get Parkinson's-like symptoms. And when that happens, that is called tardive dyskinesia. If you have that side effect when you're taking quetiapine or aripiprazole, it's possible that taking magnesium can help with that. And those drugs also tend to make you want to eat the world. So the magnesium can help with that as well. All right. So other drugs to be careful of. Statins. Statins, that we could do a whole episode on this. Statins are very concerning. So statins are HMG-CoA reductase inhibitors, and they block the enzyme that helps you to produce cholesterol. And they, unfortunately, cholesterol is used for lots of things in your body. So when you start blocking cholesterol production, your body doesn't make it as much. So it doesn't make it on demand like it needs it. So when you need things like cell membranes or reproductive hormones or, you know, to rebuild anything, or remember that you're a fathead. Did you know you're a fathead?
Yes, I am.
You're a fathead.
Yeah, I am.
But
thank you
I.
very much.
Everybody's a fathead.
Mm-hmm.
You have a lot of fat in your head.
Yay.
So your brain is made, your nerves are made of a lot of DHA, docosahexaenoic acid, and they're also made of cholesterol. You have a lot of nerves in your head. You have a lot of nerve cells in your head, and you need cholesterol to rebuild them. And so if you have to have well-functioning cell membranes in order for you to have good blood sugar so that everything, you know, sugar and everything else can pass through them. So when you start blocking cholesterol, it can mess you up 8 ways to Sunday. Or is it 6 ways to Sunday?
I don't know.
Might be 6 ways because, you know, it's 6 ways is the 6 days.
Yeah.
There's 6 days in the
so
week.
So then the seventh day is Sunday.
Yes, exactly. Okay. So it's six ways to Sunday. Can mess you up 6 ways to Sunday.
I'm going with it. Sounds good.
Okay. and so because of how it works, it can mess you up in all these different directions. One of the things is it causes CoQ10 deficiency, and you need coenzyme Q10 to run your electron transport chain, which is the energy system in every cell in your body. And so you can feel like you're dragging. And also you need coenzyme Q10 because your heart is always beating. It's a high energy organ, so that it needs lots of coenzyme Q10. And it's kind of crazy because you have people who are taking cholesterol blocking meds, and they also have other cardiovascular issues. So they might have a heart rhythm issue, and they might have high blood pressure, and CoQ10 can help to regulate your blood pressure. So then you take a statin and it blocks it. So if you're taking a statin already, you should take coenzyme Q10. And, you know, because of how they work, statin drugs can cause depression. Once again, if you can't rebuild your nerve cells, you're not going to have as good circulation in your brain. You're not going to have as good regulation of the neurotransmitters in brain. You can get depressed. You can also get diabetes and blood sugar regulations, particularly in your brain. But anywhere, again, because if your cell membranes aren't functioning the way that they're supposed to, you're not going to have good passage in and out of the cells of sugar as is needed. So you can have blood sugar dysregulation. And then, of course, muscle cramping and pain, because, again, when you use your muscles for anything, like walking around the house even, or walking downstairs or cutting vegetables or just, you know, sitting and lifting your leg, whatever it is, if you block your cholesterol, your nerve cells are not going to be as able to rebuild themselves. And so when that happens, you can get muscle breakdown. You can just get cramping and pain. Some people don't get, that doesn't go as far as rhabdomyolysis, but they just get cramping and pain. And people, there are people who take statins, they just absolutely can't take them because they hurt so much. And some docs will recognize that and they'll give them something else. And so they might give them something like ezetimibe, however you say it. Yes. So that drug, instead of it, it's not a an HMG-CoA reductase inhibitor. It helps you to excrete more cholesterol from your diet, which is not really a great way. I mean, the whole lowering cholesterol thing is fraught, and we're going to talk about that more next week.
Yeah, I think we probably should really dive into that one.
So the big thing about statins is they can cause rhabdomyolysis, which is really bad. That's this because of the blockage of CoQ10, it makes it so that your muscles can't rebuild themselves, they can't repair themselves, and they can break down. And when they can break down severely and suddenly, and they can dump a whole bunch of a protein into your blood called myoglobin. And myoglobin is it's a compound that contains iron in it and helps to put oxygen into your blood. And when you dump a lot of it into your blood, if you dump too much, your kidneys can't excrete it and it can cause kidney failure. So your statin can give you kidney failure. A lot of times this doesn't happen, a lot of these side effects. I'm just saying that these are things to be aware of when you're taking these pharmaceutical medications. And but one of the things to do to help your... It will cause a coenzyme Q10 deficiency. So if you're on a statin, you should always be taking coenzyme Q10. If you want to help your blood sugar regulation, you can exercise and eat a good diet, although it is possible that you will have some exercise intolerance because you're taking the statin because of how nutrients are distributed through your muscle cells. So, all right. So that's a lot of stuff. I have more things that we can talk about in terms of... In terms of medications and what to be careful of. But I'll save it for next week. Although next week, I think we're going to have a lesson on cholesterol, that we're just going to have an update on cholesterol and what it means and what it can do for you, and how to handle the testing that you get done and what are good tests to do.
There's a lot to talk about there.
A lot to talk about there, I know. All right. Well, you have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the call-in talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host Ron Maniza. You can also email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org. You can also leave questions or comments at my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at Fran Storch, ND. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Storrs.